Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 99, recorded December 16th, 2010, Ode to the MacBook Air.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off the lifetime of your new account, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TWITCH. And by Ford and Voice Activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton, joined as always by the man, the myth, the benchmarking legend, Mr. Ryan Shrout.
I like that addition. I think that's better, because if you just call me a legend, that puts a lot of pressure on me. Benchmarking I can handle, though.
Benchmarking legend. It's an important part in there. You snow has hit?
Not major snowfall, maybe like 4 or 5 inches of snow today. So a little bit of shoveling, a little bit of throwing snowballs for the dog to chase, and then back into the office. So
no snow overclocking, cooling PC adventures, or is that just too 1997?
Well, it is that. I'm also not that creative. I also don't like carrying a bunch of stuff outside. I gotta tell you, that's really what it comes down to, is laziness. I did do something funny on the way into the office. I set a can of Diet Pepsi on the back of the bed of the truck where there was a lot of snow while I started to put some stuff in. And I drove about halfway to the office before I realized that I had left it there. Luckily, it was still there and it was very cold.
That's a big plus. So,
yeah, it was a good thing.
It's like when they explode over the inside of your car when you left them on the dashboard overnight. I don't know. No, it's a mess to clean up. Should we open up with Google, the CR48, or should we open up with the AMD Radeon HD 6970 and 6950?
We'll talk about both. Let's start with the CR48. I don't have a whole lot of experience with this. Have you had hands-on time with one yet, or are you reading about it the same type of way I am?
I've had about 20 minutes hands on with it, give or take. To be honest with you, it's really about the Chrome operating system. Google went out and commissioned 60,000 notebooks to give to beta testers for the Chrome operating system. They're Atom-based netbooks. The big thing is they have that sort of texture paint, if you've ever touched a professional ThinkPad, where that sort of nice rubbery kind of stick to your fingers without being offensive and making you squirm texture. All black, right. No logos. And the most distinctive thing is, of course, instead of the caps lock key, this, in case you are not sitting in front of a computer, is a caps lock key. And where you cannot read the fuzzy language of caps lock key there is a magnifying glass, which is a search key. And it's modal based. Essentially, you're doing everything inside of a browser window. The operating system is the browser is the operating system, and if you're not online right now, you're not doing much. They include some free 3G access with it, 802.11n, and it's an Atom processor. It's like a single-core Atom processor, so it's a very inexpensive netbook for them to beta this out on. The real thing is the Chrome OS. Some people are reporting battery life as high as 10 hours, and I don't know how much of that is about the architecture and the drivers, which are pretty stripped down, or just that they crammed a decent-sized battery and a very small screen and power-sipping CPU on that one. So, nice. Yeah, now, Samsung... sorry.
No, I was going to say, from a hardware point of view, it's not that interesting necessarily, but I like the way it looks. I mean, yeah. It looks very cool. It looks kind of like it's an unbranded, all jet black type finish. A lot of people are talking about how much they missed the matte finish on the screen, even that type of thing. It looks very much like a laptop that I would carry around, if only because it's unassuming. It's not real flashy. It doesn't have a lot of logos everywhere, swirly or glittery on top, anything like that.
It's not, I don't know what they call the sort of, you know, the there's kind of sort of the murdered out phase where there was the black, you know, covers for the turn signals and the shiny black right. paint. And that's been replaced by kind of by flat black paint on something other than the hot rods around here. Yeah, I agree. Both of us actually are big ThinkPad fans. And this is very yes. this is like a ThinkPad crossed with like Philippe Stark. They've just like stripped everything off of it. There is a touchpad, there is a keyboard, there is a magnifying glass instead of a caps lock button, there is a screen, and the rest of it is matte black. It's very stripped down. I mean, Acer and Samsung are expected to be the first two companies coming out with Chrome OS powered notebooks. I can only hope that they're going to do something more powerful, preferably, you know, either with one of the new Intel chipsets or with NVIDIA's Ion chipset, because it's not a very powerful notebook right now. And partially, you know, part of that is obviously, it's a single core Atom processor. I'm pretty sure it's single core Atom processor. And, you know, the other thing is it's just there's not enough oomph inside the notebook to deal with a lot of large video files. It's going to be interesting to see what Samsung and Acer come up with and whether or not they are as restrained with their designs as Google chose to be with this one.
Very cool. So, I have applied for one, haven't gotten it yet. Hopefully very soon I'll be able to play around with one. That would be I imagine going to CES, this will be like the status icon. Oh, look, he's got one of those new CR48s and using it, but at least having it and holding it, right?
Well, it was funny, like Harry McCracken over at Technologizer was talking about, like, you know, I was going to use this exclusively for the next few days, but I can't actually use any of the applications I need to modify my website. And other people have been like, you know, yeah, I can use it to edit stuff. And, you know, as long as you have web access, as long as your files are compatible, you're okay. So, you know, if I were a leading edge kind of hardware blogger, I would be absolutely stoked about my competitors trying to fight their way through the Chrome operating system. Sure. and because there is a little bit of a learning path to even I'm going to say one last thing. I'm going to shut up because I can babble about this for a while, because it's really funny. While, you know, you've got Apple creating this iPad and adding greater layers of functionality, and as you know, your appliance vendors, the people that make your TVs, are bringing more and more of the computer environment into them. You know, you've got the biggest net company in the world trying to give you a single mode appliance that happens to look like a notebook, which is what this, you know, the Chrome OS and the CR48 are. So there's something kind of funny about how, you know, televisions are getting smarter and notebooks are getting, I guess televisions are getting smarter and notebooks are getting simpler on some level. It's going to be interesting to see where all this is in 12 months.
Should be something else that's getting more interesting as we approach, we're in winter. So as we approach CES, I guess I will say, is the graphics card arena continues. I think last week you said, man, it seems like we have a graphics card release every week. Is that going to continue? Surely we have a break. Unfortunately, that was not the case. This week, AMD released the Radeon HD 6970 and HD 6950, both of which look pretty much identical to this. And so what's interesting about these graphics cards is that it is a new architecture. This is a new DX11, obviously, design. It improves tessellation performance over previous generation. It changes the architecture from a fairly integral level, and now it's a VLIW4 system, which basically means it does 4 instructions wide rather than 5 instructions wide, which sounds like a little backwards in performance. Right. But the 4 ALUs that it handles are now even. They're a little bit more powerful than the ones that were used in the other ones, and it allows AMD to keep the processing engine fed in a more easy way. So overall performance is better. So that's kind of the end result. If you want more details on the actual architecture and the nitty gritty, go to pcpart.com and look at the review I wrote up. But the end result that's most important is that performance is better compared to the 6970 is about anywhere from 15 to 20% faster than the Radeon HD 5870. So last generation's previous high-end single GPU card. Now, that's not a huge amount of performance delta, I would say. But the good news is pricing is still pretty good. This card is going to sell for $369, It was available, you know, actually a couple of hours before launch for that exact price. So we don't have to worry about price gouging up at higher ends or anything like that. And my guess is probably as we get closer to the end of the year, we might actually see, you know, price stabilization and that come down 10 or 20 bucks. So it's a good price card, about the same price as the 5870s that you'll find today, but 15 to 20% faster. That is a good deal.
It seemed like it was parity with the NVIDIA 570, touch and go with the 580, but so much less expensive than the 580.
Right. I would say compared to the 570, it's pretty close, the edge going to the 6970, going to the new AMD card. And there were a couple of instances where this card could almost kind of get close to keeping up with the GTX 580. But yeah, you're right. That card is $150 more than this card, making it a price performance winner without a doubt, right? Maybe it's not the best performance. It may not be the best performance per watt, but it's the best performance per dollar if we're looking at those two options. The 570 is still a great card, but this one definitely put in competition to where there really was none. Now, the 6950, which I'll hold up here, looks identical, so you won't be able to tell the difference. It is a little bit slower. It's got fewer shader processors. It's $299 instead of $369. And it's interesting because NVIDIA has a card at $250 and they have a card at $350, but they don't really have a card at $300. And although it might seem like we're kind of splitting hairs at this point, $300 is a fairly popular price point, and it fits kind of right in that segment in terms of performance, right? So it can kind of lean towards a GTX 570. And it's definitely beating the GTX 470, so that's a pretty good option there. There's tons of pages of benchmarks on our review at PCPer.com, so I'm not going to run through those here or anything. But I think some people might have been surprised that these weren't like the new king of the hill graphics card. Actually, one of the emails we have that we'll get to in a little bit details that pretty well. So I'll kind of, I'll leave it at that for these two graphics cards, as I'll touch on a couple of other points when we get to those emails, I guess. So
the Bavarian Barbarian.
Yes, we will answer your question, sir. Before we do that, let's take a quick second. Thank the first of today's podcast sponsors. That would be Squarespace. Squarespace.com is the fast and easy way to publish a high quality website or blog. It has an easy to use user interface for creating and managing your website. It's optimized for both beginners and CSS experts. So if you know how to code for web pages, you have that ability, you have that flexibility, but you don't have to. You don't have to buy books, CSS for Dummies, or anything like that to learn about it. You have templates and you can easily modify things. It's an all-inclusive service, has blog modules, forums, form builders, a Flickr photo display, Twitter widgets, Google Maps, a whole lot of stuff like that. It has website tracking and analytics, as well as a built-in search engine optimizer, permission access handling if you have multiple people that you want to be able to edit this website. Maybe you want to create your own hardware tech blog where you can talk about new releases and different things like that. With you and a couple of friends while you're in school. It's really easy to do. It's cheap to do. It's based on a cloud architecture for speed and site stability. So if you get linked from Dig or Slashdot or some of these other major sites, you don't have to worry about your site getting taken down because of overuse, overconsumption of resources or anything like that. They have an iPhone app so you can log in your website and update it on the go. For a free trial of this service, all you have to do is go to squarespace.com and use offer code TWICH, T-W-I-C-H. You sign up for a free account. There's no credit card needed. Just try it out. Build your website, play with it for a couple of weeks, see what you can get out of it, what you like about it, what you don't. I don't think there's going to be anything that you're going to not like about the service. And then when you decide to purchase it, if you use the offer code TWICH, you get 10% off of the lifetime of the new account. For as long as you're with their service, you'll get a 10% discount. That's squarespace.com, offer code TWICH, and we thank them for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware.
That is a good deal, people. It is. We've been beating the drum on Sandy Bridge, cautioning you about buying a new notebook, contemplating that this may be an awesome processor for a home theater PC. And then all of a sudden, Sandy Bridge Core i7, i5 CPUs and motherboards started showing up for sale 3 weeks early?
By my watch, yes. So even though we have the processors in stock, we have motherboards. I don't want to say in stock, we're not selling them, but in-house. Motherboards in-house. We've been playing around with it. you guys, the general reader, isn't listener, viewer, whatever we have, isn't supposed to be able to buy these until January 5th or 6th, something like that, right around CES time frame. Right. Apparently, a website called loyat.net, which is a Malaysian technology website, just went into their local computer store and found the second generation of the Intel Core i processors, or i5, it's an i7s, based on Sandy Bridge, just for sale in the store. Motherboards as well. So it's not like the processors are there, but you got nothing to plug them into. If you are lucky enough to run into these, you can build a Sandy Bridge system today for yourself. And they're not even like overcharging. They're not even like trying to, you know, get their extra bit of cash because they're, you know, they know they're going to get hit on the back end by Intel when they get in trouble or anything like that. It's probably a mistake, but this is some of the things that happens when maybe you don't have as close a control over the
channel the as you thought you did.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was weird because when I first saw this, I heard Taiwan and I automatically thought gray market parts. They were, you know, supposed to be one of the major, you know, notebook builders are supposed to have these parts. Somebody decided, you know, something fell off the back of a truck. And then you see the pictures and they're full retail packaging. And it's weird because like some of the rumors are like, okay, maybe Intel's, you know, Intel's got excess stock, the existing Core i5 and i7 processors. So they may sit on the release for 6 weeks and all of a sudden, whoa, hey, you know, maybe they're, you know, it's hard to tell if this was like a massive mistake with somebody in a warehouse or maybe they're running out of, you know, maybe the OEM stuff, they have big stockpiles up because people are holding off and buying notebooks and the retail stuff they've already run out of. I think it's going to be interesting to watch how fast you know, whether or not Intel kind of writes off the existing stock of the Core i7, i5s, because that's one of the rumors that I'd be curious to hear your opinion, because that's one of the rumors I've heard a bunch about lately is Intel's like, we got a lot of chips in the warehouse. How long can
the new chips or the old chips?
The new chips, or the old chips, I should say. Well, probably a lot of the new chips, too. But like basically, that ever since the Sandy Bridge stuff became pretty well known this summer, there seems to be a little bit of a hesitation in the market about buying the existing processor.
I'm almost sure that's the case. Now, one of the benefits is that Intel has is they control their production, so they've probably been able to adjust that as they go, where this usually bites a company in the butt is at the motherboard side, where they, you know, will have decided last January or last maybe as late as June, well, we'll buy this X number of, you know, P55 chipsets so we can keep making these Linfield motherboards. And now they've got lots of these motherboards. And we've seen times in the past where processor updates have been delayed because all of Intel or AMD's partners have so many motherboards out in the channel that once those CPUs come out, they won't even have a chance to sell. In this case, I mean, chances are Intel has a lot of those. They'll just discount them. They won't make as much money on them. I mean, they're still going to be able to sell them. I think we will have a ton of Sandy Bridge available parts just because I think these products have been done for a long time. They're obviously done now. We can see the retail packaging and everything in these pictures. And so they've been stockpiling and making them this for the last 3 or 4 months. Ready to release, and they just probably thought, hey, CES is the best time to do that. We've got the biggest audience to do that. Just hold it all off, and we'll be good to go. But like we've been saying the last couple of weeks, it just makes sense to, at this point, to wait for Sandy Bridge performance numbers, which may come online way sooner than we thought now because of all that, before making a decision. Maybe it's worth it to save $200 or $300 on that notebook and get the Core i5 part rather than, you know, waiting for the Sandy Bridge CPU. It's just something we'll have to see as it goes. Now, I know we've talked about OnLive quite a few times here. The reviews are finally out. The micro console is finally out. This is the device that lets you play OnLive technology and games on your TV without having to go through a PC or a Mac or anything like that. It looks like if you go to Engadget, they have an OnLive micro console teardown, which is basically where they rip it apart to see what this is made out of. We have a Marvell chip in here. It's apparently based on the Armada processor. He did tease at one point earlier this year that it would be showing up in a new gaming platform. Nobody really knew exactly what he was talking about. Turns out it was this OnLive console. You can go there and check out some of the pictures. It looks like it's got 512 megs of RAM, which is not a whole lot, but when you consider that this device is only really doing video decoding and networking interface, and controller interface, it's actually a pretty powerful machine for what it's doing. So my guess is that this Marvell chip has a very dedicated processor for video decode, a very capable processor for video decode, I should say. But that's kind of the idea of the teardown. They also have, let me guess here. Did we lose Patrick?
You lost me, but I'm back again. Actually, I was there. I just couldn't hear a word. The audio clipped out. So,
well, what I said was OnLive tore down a micro console from OnLive.
Right. But Marvell chipset, cheap parts count, slash, wow, look at all the video decoding you can do in a single chip these days. What did Engadget think of it? Because they seem to have gotten the most time hands-on with it, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can go out and buy it. You can order it today. It's $99. We talked about it last week or a couple of weeks ago. It's a pretty slick-looking device in terms of it's just small and it doesn't take up a lot of space. It's pretty nice. They're reiterating that the controller is very high-quality feeling. It doesn't feel like a cheap type of accessory as well. Two analog sticks. It looks kind of clunky, but it has all the fit and finish, right? It's got it rips off both Microsoft and Sony in terms of kind of creating a console. I like that it has the media control buttons at the bottom, which are kind of handy instead of having to remember if X is start or pause or B is start or pause and stuff like that. They talk about the quality. And one of the things that I thought kind of stood out with it, my issue with OnLive when I first tested it a while ago was that, it's a 720p image that you're getting. And depending on what monitor resolution you have, whether that be on a laptop or on a desktop, chances are it's going to be higher than that. And even when it's not, we're talking about essentially 720p streaming video. So if you've ever watched YouTube or you've watched a lot of online video, even when it's streaming in 720p, you're going to see artifacts. You're going to see blocking. You're going to see blacks that aren't smooth and that type of thing. And that's what you get some of that with OnLive, because it is a streaming video stream. Mm-hmm. I guess that's too many uses of that word. But what they said was it actually makes more sense when you have it on a TV, which is sitting across the room for you, as opposed to a monitor where you're very close. When you're that close, you can see all those imperfections. When it's on a TV further away, you're less likely to notice them. Maybe but less likely.
If you've ever used Netflix, if you've ever expanded a YouTube video to full screen, then kind of the farther you back away from it, the less you notice all the artifacts and the compression artifacts. I thought it was interesting that they were, I rarely see like all, it's not all caps, but it is all bold, in all bold type. And it's like, we can't stress this enough. If you're not sure whether the micro console will work for you, test OnLive on a computer first. Because apparently, like TVs larger than 40 inches, they recommend a consistent 5 megabit per second stream.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Yes. especially because I was laughing, because here in our office, I'd done a speed test right before. Well, actually about a half an hour before we went on, and I was laughing because I was getting 60 megabits per second up and 17 megabits per second down, and that's off of a pretty healthy connection. So I'd be curious. I will check out OnLive at home tonight to see exactly how well it holds up on my home cable connection. I'll be really curious to see that.
It did pretty good. Here we've got like a 20 meg down. At home now, we just got DOCSIS 3 installed, so I actually have a 50 meg down service there. And it worked fairly well, and we could tell by monitoring the bandwidth. It does use that much bandwidth. I think we were 750 to 800 kilobytes per second consistent the whole time we were playing, which gets up into that 5 megabit per second range. So keep that in mind if you want to try it out. But I think for $99, it's a low enough price item that it's kind of in that impulse buy area, little gadget. Let's try it out and see if it works. You know, it's something like I'm just thinking now of if I buy one, it'd be nice just to see the kids, my nieces and nephews and stuff play PC games on this and see what they think, right? Because they're younger. They don't really care about the technology. They don't want to know how it works.
See if they just want it to work.
Something doesn't feel right about this, Uncle Ryan. Why is something not right, right? I think it might be a good kind of blind taste test scenario for it, perhaps.
And a lot less expensive than a console, than an Xbox 360 or a PS3.
It's a lot less expensive. Well, it's like half price from an Xbox Live or an Xbox, the Arcade Edition or whatever the cheapest. Right. I think they have one for $199, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you actually buy one of those in a store?
I don't know. You know, but so it's different because you're paying $99 versus you can do it on your PC or your Mac for free, right? You can try it out. The games aren't free. You have to subscribe or buy games or play the demos, but the application itself is free, which is always good if you want to get – free is always good, right? You're always going to get more people to try out your goods.
When they're free.
If the hook is free, right? You know, first sample free. After that, it's $20 a hit. So in this case, the games are the hit. And the console application is free.
I think we have officially taken this metaphor too far. I just want to point out that you have – I think it's safe to say you have officially warmed up to the online service because you were even more hesitant about it than I was, and I was pretty hesitant about it.
I still don't think enthusiast gamers are going to accept this. And unfortunately, when OnLive first started promoting it, that's what they were promoting it as. He's like, here's how we're going to replace console gaming, and here's how we're going to replace PC gaming. And instead, it's more like a compliment for certain types of games and certain situations. But yeah, I mean, when they stopped charging on a monthly basis just to have the service, right? And now that they're offering kind of like a Netflix-style subscription, $15 a month for as many games as you can play, I think it becomes a much more interesting
option. I still think the perfect place for this is hotel rooms, replacing all those Nintendo systems from the 80s. Should we grab a couple questions? Because we actually have two sponsors tonight. It's very exciting. Sure. Should we get a couple questions in before we go to the sponsors?
Yeah, let's do that.
Email from Seth. He wants to know if you can fit a micro ATX motherboard in a standard ATX case. Yes. Ideally, the bottom of the case where you have the little tiny risers match up with the micro ATX motherboard. There's some holes in there for that size because the micro ATX is smaller than an ATX. If not, I have seen people use duct tape risers, foam, hot glue, and what other hideous things have I seen people do to mount motherboards inside of places where they didn't belong? That's short answer is yes. Just make sure you've got just make sure you take the time to keep the bottom of the motherboard with all the little tiny contacts from touching the steel back of your PC, because if those two get together, it generally means bad things for your motherboard.
It does. let's take our email here from the Bavarian Barbarian, which we teased at the beginning. He says, like many other PC enthusiasts, he eagerly awaited the release of the Radeon 6900 cards. Actually, I stayed up till midnight on Tuesday to read the reviews on PC Perspective, of course. While the initial reaction was one of disappointment because 6970 didn't stomp all over NVIDIA, I now look at these cards more favorably. I think that most of us had very high expectations since the introduction of the 5870, which allowed AMD to take the GPU crown. We probably expected the same thing to happen again, and because it didn't, we felt let down. The bottom line is the 6970 plays second fiddle to the GTX 580, but at a price point which is very attractive.
While AMD didn't come out
ahead, it does. It's a good conclusion here to make. Right. While AMD didn't come out ahead of NVIDIA in terms of performance, it did manage in terms of price per performance. Enough babble. Here's the question. He currently has a water-cooled ATI 4870 X2. Which served him well for a few years. It still cranks out relatively high frame rates when playing first-person shooters, but lately he's been craving something new. I mostly look at AMD because I plan on running three monitors and don't want to get into SLI. Will the 6970 perform better than my 4870 X2? How much will I gain if I upgrade? Or should I wait for the 6990 to be released sometime in January or February? And what do I anticipate the price to be?
I have a question. Is it the 4870 X2? Is that a model, or is he running 4870s in Crossfire?
The 4870 X2 is indeed a model of the Radeon card. It is a dual GPU. It is essentially 4850s GPUs, mm-hmm. those clock speeds and specs, running on the same graphics card in kind of a full-time Crossfire mode. So that's kind of the magic of how all that works. It came out in, I'm looking it up here, July of 2008. So we are like 2.5 years since its introduction.
That means like a 400% improvement, right, if he goes to the 6990?
Well, the 6990 would definitely be an improvement, but we don't know exactly when that's going to be out. I wanted to check one number here. Mm-hmm. Because I get this question a lot. How does my two-year-old graphics card compare to the new one that just came out? And it's really, really difficult because we can't keep track of everybody's graphics card through the last 2 years and update to all the latest benchmarks. And that's where one of these benefits that we talked about last week, 3D Mark 11, 3D Mark Vantage has been one of these consistent ones over the last X number of years.
Yeah, and, I mean, Tom's Hardware for a while was doing those gigantic. Basically, mm-hmm. they would have every graphics card they could find, and they would run them on all of their available benchmarks. And I can't imagine, I having spent a lot of time locked in a room trying to get graphics benchmarks to run, I cannot imagine the nightmare that must have been for the crew putting it together. But I don't think anybody's doing. I mean, they literally had like 4 years worth of graphics cards in a single chart, and I don't think anybody's still doing that unless they've just. Yeah.
So the 3D Mark Vantage Extreme, mm-hmm. this is the highest resolution, scored about 6,800 points on his old card. This card scored 10,400 points. So the answer is yes, this is going to be significantly faster. 3D Mark Vantage is not a real world game, but let's just kind of apply it to different things. So it's going to be faster. The 6990 will be, of course, even faster than that. Price-wise, I would expect you're going to pay $499 to $549 for that other card. So if that's in your budget, it might be worth waiting through January. I would, if I had to take a guess, I honestly have no idea when this card's going to be out. I would say by the end of January, we'll probably see it, but maybe not. So if you want a new card before that, if that itch to buy new hardware is too strong, the 6970 is going to be a good option. And you can always buy another one in February. And then you get even more performance there. And that result is, let's see, I actually do have a pair of 6970s here, and its score was 18,000. So then you would jump from 6,000 to 18,000. That should soothe any itch you might have.
So is it safe to assume that AMD is not going to have any major announcements, at least GPU-related, at CES, and that NVIDIA might? Because I've noticed both their names, of course, are showing up at CES like they do every year. Are you anticipating any major announcements on the GPU front?
I don't think so. I think I'm done with GPU testing between now and CES in terms of new product. I think after that, I've already been told that we're going to have meetings and all this other kind of stuff for both companies. I don't think we'll see anything launched at CES though.
Okay.
So I don't think we're that close to anything. So, if that helps put things in perspective.
Wireless interference, the best place to find which components you should buy, and overbuilding coming up right now that we want to thank one of our sponsors, Ford, and their delicious Sync technology. Ryan?
That's right. This episode is brought to you by Ford and Voice Activated Sync. Now, it's illegal in the state of California, which I am not a resident of, to talk on the phone while driving. Is that correct?
This is correct. No. It's illegal to hold the phone up to the side of your head.
Okay.
Talking on the phone like this, illegal. Having a Bluetooth device, which actually the Ford Sync technology would turn your car, your Ford sedan, wagon, or truck into a gigantic and high-fidelity Bluetooth headset. I just want to point that out. I've had that joyful experience on the highways of California and Nevada. But always at the speed limit.
I think in Kentucky, in Ohio, it might be against the law now too. Maybe it's just texting. I don't really keep track of that kind of stuff. I have a lot of Bluetooth devices, but so if you're making a lot of calls while you're driving, if you're wanting to listen to music, if you're searching through your iPod or something like that, that's dangerous. We shouldn't be doing that. The voice activated forward sync system has true hands-free calling. You know, you just say the name of the person you want to call, hit the button, say call Patrick, and if Patrick is unlucky enough to be in my phone book, then he would get that buzz. It gives you turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, a lot more. And Sync is available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. Sync listens to your voice so you can make calls on most Bluetooth-enabled mobile phones, get turn-by-turn directions, and real-time traffic alerts and weather reports. And if you're ever in an accident and your airbags deploy, Sync automatically calls 911 for you. So that's always good. Safety first, so to speak. Other features from Sync: music and podcast search on most MP3 media players, personalized traffic alerts. Sync knows your route and sends you traffic alerts, so that's good. It will even reroute you with better turn-by-turn directions. Audible text messages, so it will read text messages to you as they come in. Sync helps you keep your eyes on the road and hands on the wheel. It's standard on some Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury models, optional on others. Be sure to check it out. And there's also an exciting contest happening from Ford. It's your chance to win a trip to Madrid for you and a friend. So you could take me if you want to test drive the all new Ford Focus coming out in early 2011. And not only do you get that, but you get to decide where Ford will make a donation to a charitable cause of your choice. To enter to win, submit a video now through December 31st. You're getting close on time, so we got to get started on this, saying what charitable cause you would support and why. If you're selected, Ford will donate $10,000 to the charitable cause, and it'll send you and that friend on that trip to Madrid to test drive the Ford Focus at Spain's National Institute for Aerospace Technology. To learn more and submit a video, go to twitfordfocus.com. Make sure you make that video that where you want the donation to go, and make that clip and make the submission. It's available to Twit audience members worldwide. So it's not a U.S.-only contest, so that's good. The URL, again, is twitfordfocus.com, and be sure to mention Twit and Twitch. So we thank them for their support of our show. Now, I think we have more emails to get to.
I just want to point out, I have driven the 2012 Ford Focus, and it is an awesome ride. I can't wait to see the RS version, and if they do an RS version, I desperately want them to bring it to the United States. All right, Alex has a question about wireless interference. He says, I want to switch to a wireless headset and a wireless mouse, the Logitech G930 and the RAT 9 to be more precise. And I'm wondering if there are any concerns about interference between multiple 2.4 gigahertz wireless devices on the same desk. I would love to switch to a wireless keyboard as well, but I will keep the upgrades incremental. Reading is such a difficult concept. Thanks ahead for your advice and keep up the great work. Alex. Okay, my relationship to wireless keyboards is strained at best. I've had some pretty good luck with the Logitech wireless keyboards. I've done some really interesting stuff with solar recharging wireless keyboards. It actually has me tempting the fates to go to a wireless keyboard again when they run. I love them. 2.4 gigahertz is the junk bandwidth. It's the FCC said, great. You want to do radios? Use 2.4. Wi-Fi? Use 2.4. Microwave ovens? Use 2.4. Four. So, generally speaking, the distances are so short between your computer and your mouse and your keyboard and your desktop, because most of these, I think, are using they're not using, it's not Wi-Fi. It's an actual sort of semi-proprietary USB jack that plugs into your computer. I'm not too worried about it. I would say that the audio is going to be a little compressed on the headset, although it's got like 72 four-star reviews, the Logitech G930 on Amazon, which is a pretty good sign. I also like checking out the RAT 9 gaming mouse, which is a wireless gaming mouse from Logitech that looks like something that would be incredibly uncomfortable, but it's got 111 reviews on Amazon.com, all of the, like, 4-star or higher. So, I'm thinking if these were creating problems, people would have shouted out about it. Generally speaking, if you have very short distances and you've got a company that's doing good engineering, it's not a problem. It's when you start getting into sort of third-tier brands that chew through batteries every 20 minutes and start to disconnect when you're not using it. The fact that people are using wireless gaming mice is a sign that the technology is really, really matured. Gamers cannot stand problems with their mice. If they were having problems with the mice, they would be shouting it from the rooftops. And I expect to get a flood of email from people who cannot stand wireless mice. But I think you'll be okay, Alex. And I think the idea of adding this stuff in incrementally is a great idea. That way you can sort of, you know, test the pain threshold as you start building everything up. Good plan.
I use a lot of wireless devices. Don't really have any major problems with them. Even when I do some stuff. I've been addicted to Logitech MX5 mice. I think that's what it is for a long time now. So, and we got an email from Ron about the best place for information about components to buy. I think this is going to be an easy question. I thought I heard you mention a list or website of gaming computer components a number of different times. I can't seem to find it. What I'm looking for is a list of the best price to performance ratio parts to build a gaming system from scratch. Is there a place to quickly put together a shopping list of the current best price components or a best system for under this much? Thanks for your help, and I love the show. Thank you. Shameless promotion is PC Perspective Hardware Leaderboard.
Absolutely.
Which kind of does that exact same thing where we have set price points. And we say, here's mm-hmm. what we think are the best components at that price point. And obviously, we do a lot of reviews and stuff, but there are tons of great sites on the net. A lot of good guys doing write-ups on this type of hardware. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say we'd actually used that on Techzilla a couple weeks ago as the basis point for Serafina's $500 PC that we're building next week. But yeah, no, PC per leaderboard. Fine. I just wish it actually was pcper.com/leaderboard.
We could do that. We could make that happen. It's pcper.com/HWLB, which may be a little bit too hard to get to. But I'll make that happen tonight. But I mean, you've got written down here a non-tech. They do really, really, really good stuff. Hardocp.com, which you and I both know Kyle very well. Another great site for components, reviews, that type of stuff. Maximum PC. Yeah. I mean, there's a good community that does this type of stuff, and most of them do it very well.
Absolutely. And then it's just a matter of actually finding the prices at the promises. Parts at the prices you want, and remembering that depending on where you're purchasing them from, you may be getting hit with taxes and or shipping fees. Nothing's worse than finding out your $500 PC is a $600 PC after you get all the parts sent to you. So check Newegg, Tiger Direct. Fry's is kind of national these days. Amazon.com occasionally has some great prices and some good shipping deals. Central Computer is our local PC parts place here in San Francisco. And I say that because you should always cultivate your local PC place that sells parts, because if you don't, they will go out of business. And when you really, really need something at 7 o'clock on a Friday night, you will not be able to get it. And you'll have to wait until Monday or Tuesday for it to be overnighted to you at great expense.
Exactly.
Eric's got an interesting question about overbuilding. It says, hey guys, love the show. Thank you, Eric. After years of buying off-the-shelf desktops, I've decided to put my own together after my desktop died. I'm thinking of going with an AMD Phenom 2 X4 965 Black Edition, 8 gigabytes of DDR3 RAM 1600, and a MOBO that has yet to be determined. I plan to run Windows 7 Professional 64-bit. Why? I primarily use my PC for schoolwork and converting video for my iPod, Droid, and my car's AV system for the kids. My current system, pre-built HP, ran an AMD Athlon 5000 dual core, 3 gigabytes of cheap RAM. It was okay for video conversions, but it would sometimes get bogged down. I also tend to have a bunch of applications going at the same time. In my new build, I plan to run HDMI to my flat screen to play the occasional movie and plan to use whatever onboard graphics it has built in. This may be a mistake, my friend. So I am overbuilding for what am I intended, or is there something else I should consider for my new build? Yes, a GPU.
Eight
gigabytes of DDR RAM. If you're not editing video or editing huge files, I think 8 gigabytes overkill. 4 gigabytes enough for most normal human applications. Windows 7 Professional 64-bit, unless you are the dude that actually needs the encryption in that, I think it's a waste of money, unless you have a free copy. I just don't know anybody outside of the corporate world.
Now, the only thing I would say is there was one thing I needed professional for here, and that was, I was trying to create a network between my computer at home and my computer at the office. What's that technology I needed?
VPN.
Yes, there you go. And so to accept VPN connection or to create a VPN like server on that software, you needed the professional edition. So that's really the only thing I could have ever thought of.
Yeah, I mean, and there are various VPN clients to get around there. If you have a reason for using Windows 7 Professional, great. Don't just buy it because it sounds like it's better than Home Premium. Ultimate, I think, is an even bigger waste of money. But for 95% of the people I know, Home Premium is more than enough Windows 7 to make them happy. I'd go with 4 gigabytes of RAM. I would buy a GPU. Even a low-end GPU is going to allow you to offload, depending on which applications you're running, you can offload some of the encoding for the iPods, Droids, or your car's AV system, which can really help out. Going to a new processor is the number one thing to help out, speeding up that encoding. Would you recommend, I hate to bring this up, but would you recommend an Intel processor over an AMD for maximum encoding performance? Or does it really vary depending on the application?
You know, the Intel processors are a little better at that. Depending on how much of it he's doing, I mean, it's not going to be, I don't think, that dramatic of a difference. The Phenom part, the quad-core part he's got there, you know, will be more than capable of doing that. It will be so much faster than the AMD Athlon 5000 plus dual core than I think he's having already anyway. So, I mean, if you want to go Intel, that's perfectly fine. You are going to see probably a little bit of a performance boost if you happen to pick things at the same prices. But AMD is usually going to give you a little bit of a better value on that side of things. So,
how about this? AMD Phenom 2X64, 4 gigabytes of RAM, unless the 8 gigabytes is super cheap. Hold off on the GPU until you try your encoding and see how that runs, and then decide whether or not you want to try to offload the video encoding to the GPU after you have tested out your fabulous new Phenom 2 Black Edition.
That should work. Good choice. Cool. Oh, we've got an email from Ken about input lag on TVs. This is a topic that comes up a lot for us here. We talk about it. And viewers want to talk about it, and this is the idea of using a TV as your monitor. Wanted to make a comment. So this is from Ken again. Just want to make a comment more than a question about using a TV as a monitor since we've been talking about it. I know this is a widely known limitation. It's certainly not published by many screen manufacturers, but is of great relevance to gamers hoping to use a TV for a monitor. It's input lag. There's nothing to do with the gray to gray response times that everyone knows, but about the time delay that occurs from the signal arriving at the TV to the image being displayed on screen. The size of the delay depends on many things, including the amount of image processing that the TV or monitor is doing. This delay can be considerable. As considerable as 150 milliseconds, which makes no difference if you're just watching video, but if you're gaming, that 150 millisecond lag is a deal breaker. Input lag is generally much greater on TVs than it is on monitors, as they often do much more image processing. And just thought listeners should be made aware of that limitation before they decide.
I had an interesting conversation with Robert Herron about this. You know, it's kind of funny. If you go into the AV Science Forum, the avsforum.com, They're discussing sort of, you know, plasma versus LED, lag input issues, how they vary from television to television. You know, is it worse on Samsung than LG, or LG than Samsung, or why doesn't Sony, you know, Sony's so big about gaming on the PS3, they should have absolutely no lag issues. And the thing that Robert Herron came back to me with is check out the gaming mode. There should be no lag or minimal lag in the gaming mode, no matter what brand of television you're using, if it has a gaming mode. That should pretty much turn off all of the because basically what's happening is you start processing video, and then video processing gets more sophisticated and they do more of it, and eventually, okay, it's something that's noticeable for a Twitch gamer. And when I say Twitch, I mean, you know, first person shooter, not Twitch. This week in computer hardware. But You know, you know, try out game mode, some other stuff. Turn off video processing, see if there's an HDMI DVI setting or a DVI input on your monitor using VGA or DVI instead of HDMI. And check to see if there's latency calibration in the video game that you're running. Rock Band is one that does this, where it allows you to sort of tweak everything between your monitor and the console or the PC you're running. It's really funny. PC World's recommendation in an article they did, I think it was last year, was that you should bring your gaming notebook or desktop to the home theater store, or the HDTV store, the Best Buy, and test it out on the floor. And ideally, that would be awesome if you can find like your local, you know, video shop that'll let you drag your home theater PC, your gaming PC in there and test it out. Robert and I are actually having a conversation now about whether or not we should be doing more testing of this, but I think in his experience, the gaming mode tends to eliminate most of the noticeable input lag on that one.
This first became apparent to me when I started playing games like Guitar Hero and Rock Band.
Right,
where all of a sudden, having to do things at exact timings with the TV, and then they started introducing all the different input options. Also, I was reading something because I'm probably an hour away from buying a new TV, and I was looking up a lot of these different types of things, and some of them are even like the HDMI 1 port supports the game mode or the less input lag, while the HDMI 2 port does not. So you've got to be, you know, check out a lot of these forums for things like that as well. So it is a good thing to take note of. So
something to be aware of. Also, I've also noticed if you're trying to read text on an HDTV, put it farther away from you. Your desk is probably not deep enough for a 42, 46, not so much. Chuck's got a question about the MacBook Air 13. He says, I love the show and I listen every week. Thank you, Chuck. I'm usually a Windows or Ubuntu guy, but I'm considering a MacBook Air 13 for college and law school in 2012. I love the idea of how small and light the Air is. I also love the flash memory and SSD is a must in my next laptop. I'm concerned about the Air's performance because I haven't played with one yet. Would you recommend any other laptop that is similar in cost or cheaper and also really light and has good battery life? 13 inches is the smallest screen I want because I like a lot of screen real estate. One other question, is the higher end 13-inch Air worth the upgrade? The flash memory increase isn't a big deal to me, but I'm wondering if the CPU upgrade is worth the cost. Any advice is appreciated. Thank you, Chuck. I bought my wife the 13-inch MacBook Air, and it kicks the snot out of her, you know, Core Duo powered MacBook from almost three and a half years ago.
Right.
So if you have a 2 or 3 year old notebook, I think it's going to be a healthy improvement on that one. If you are super duper video editor, I run Final Cut Pro, which you are not. I think you would probably want a full MacBook Pro. I really like the MacBook Air. I like it a lot. I wish there were a few more ports on it, and that you didn't have to carry around dongles to use an external monitor. But it's a really, you know, and people are you're paying the Apple penalty. You're paying the cool person's notebook penalty. But the reality is, you know, when you take a chunk of aluminum, you mill a space out of it to stuff a keyboard and a motherboard and a screen, you have a really nice piece of engineering and a very solid notebook. I'm not going to pitch it down the stairs in front of the library or college, but I think it's going to hold up very well. Well, you laugh, right? But I remember, you know, one of my first notebooks.
I could do that to my Lenovo.
You could, but you're also, you know, ready to replace your Lenovo. I mean, one of my first notebooks kind of disintegrated in my bag because I was always carrying around like 35 pounds of textbooks wherever I went in college. And it, you know, the plastic did not suffer that experience very well. So I would also put a piece of a very clean, carefully monitored piece of microfiber cloth in between the keyboard and the screen if you carry a lot of textbooks at college, so that you don't end up with that amazing keyboard imprint on the monitor.
I have that on this display right here in front of me, actually. I can't see it when the screen is on, but when the screen is off, I can see it.
I've got it on my MacBook over here, too. It's kind of I'm embarrassed that I didn't prevent this from happening. I like them. You know, similarly, there's a lot of laptops around $1,000 that are not as thin. But You know, and I had the same debate,
and mine ended up, he said right here, he doesn't want anything less than 13 inches screen. I ordered an X201 refurb from the Lenovo store that was like $900. It's got a 12-inch screen, so it doesn't exactly fit his specifications. But I feel like the X201 will be faster, and I'm more... I really, really like the way the MacBook Airs look and feel, and I go to Best Buy every time I'm in there, and I go to that section of the store, and I play with it. Like, man, but I want 4 gigs of memory, and I want a 256-gig SSD, and I can add those to my X201 or X200 way cheaper than I can add them to this system. So, look, if somebody said, hey, I've got one here for you, I would definitely take it and use it. I would like it.
Yeah, I wouldn't bother too much with the CPU upgrade. The flash memory, I would actually, if I could, especially if you plan on keeping this thing to 2012, 2013, I would try to get 4 gigabytes instead of 2 gigabytes. OS X, like Windows 7, loves some more memory to play around in. I like it, you know. I would take care of it. I would get all of the insurance on it I could afford because notebooks have a funny – well, notebooks have a funny habit of disintegrating, and college is a funny place to take innocent technology.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
You know, there's nothing worse than finding out your roommate that likes to drink beer, dumped half of a beer down the front of your month-old notebook.
Find new roommates.
Yeah. If your roommates have
something like that.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know of anything, but in terms of something that's that thin and that well built, I don't think there's anything else out there for the money. HP's got some interesting stuff at the high end. Dell doesn't really have anything that thin. They've got good workmanlike notebooks. The thinnest, Lenovo stuff. I mean, hey, you know, if you know of a notebook that you think is as thin and as light and as lovely as the MacBook Air, do us a favor. Email us twitch@twit.tv. Speaking of which, you can email us with another question.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it,
you know, it's not like we've got different email addresses for MacBook Air questions and other questions. We need your emails. We need your questions. Tell us what your problems are. Maybe we can answer them semi-correctly. Twitch.tv. That is the best way to get a hold of us. Obviously, you can catch us both on Twitter as well. He is at Patrick Norton, and I am at Ryan Shrout. We're both very creative when it comes to that type of stuff.
We've got day jobs, too. PCPer.com is the amazing website that Ryan Shrout runs herd on. If you need hardware reviews, I highly recommend it. You can find me at techzilla.com, TKZILL.com, spelling R4, bad thing for me. You can tell we started late. For everybody who's wondering why we're so loopy, the previous show on Twit ran a little long, about 45 minutes long. So both Ryan and I are like, food? Can we get food yet? Or maybe I am. Because it's probably 10:30 by you. Oh, almost
yes,
11.
It is quarter to 11 here. We are ready.
It's a little late, but absolutely. Email us twitch@twit.tv, and I'm going to say goodnight before I start stumbling off on another rambling ode to the beautiful and oh so delightful MacBook Air.
There you go.
Night, everybody.
Night.